Okay, welcome back. I hope you're refreshed after that brief break. Now, before we continue, we had a good question while we were offline that Rob's just going to tackle because it's a really, really interesting one.
But the question was, can I take my database file and push it up to a server or somewhere for diagnostics or for testing or for any other purpose? And the answer is?
Absolutely, you could. In actual fact, the background file transfer agent that you were talking about. Yeah,
if you want a neat way to move that kind of data around, then look at the background file transfer. I mean, the idea is, I think, that you can then take your entire customer database and just push it up the wire or back down again. And one of the things you can't do is the SQL system in the phone expects it to be in a particular file with a particular name, and you can't change that. So you can't direct the thing in anything other than the one database file in background storage. But yes, you could do that. That will work a treat.
Well, yeah, just to clarify, yeah, okay, the name of the file is actually under your control, so the database file. But yeah, it's just a file like anything else, so you can treat it like that. Yeah, if you deploy an app to the field and you want to have some kind of diagnostic thing, you want to get it back to base to figure out what's gone wrong, that would be possible. Okay, so let's move on with, where have we gone on the slides? We've gone back to the opening one. Where we are. Oh no, we're still in, we've jumped onto the next one. We're halfway through still local database storage. So let's do a deeper dive now. We had a quick look at the database and we had a quick look at pulling off an isolated storage explorer. So let's go in a little bit more detail on this, on how you program this thing. So first of all, I mentioned early on and then kind of glossed over it just because it was complicating matters, but we've been talking so far this morning about how you've got one isolated storage area for your app, and that is true. That you have one read-writable isolated storage area for your app. In actual fact, you have another area as well, which you can use for data storage. And that is the area when a user downloads your app from Marketplace and it's downloaded onto your phone as part of the normal process of purchasing it or selecting it, if it's a free one, it gets downloaded to your phone and then it just gets unpacked in a folder, a new folder for your app, which is the app data folder.
Almost undetectable. No one here can see, Jeff. No.
Did we... So hopefully you picked up on all that. So the app data folder is where the app gets downloaded and is where it's unzipped, and because a zap is just a zip file. And you can actually, for example, you could have a pre-populated database that is included in your zap, and it would be shipped as part of your application, and that ends up in your app data folder. And you can open databases that are in the app data folder. But if they remain in the app data folder, they're read-only. So you can have a read-only reference database in there.
Yeah.
You could also ship, you can create in code, as we'll show in a minute, a new database file, and that goes in your normal isolated storage area, and that, of course, is read-writable. And another variant on this, you could ship a pre-populated database that starts up in your app data folder, and then you could simply copy it across into your isolated storage area. Then it becomes read-writable. So you've got a number of options there.
Depends on how you play it, yeah.
And they have created new URI signifiers, so sort of almost drive letters to point at these things. So we've got ISO store colon slash, which is the points at your isolated storage area, and we have app data colon slash, which points at your app data area. And you can open databases in the app data folder. You can create and write to them in the ISO store area. And then, moving on. And then, live meeting has stopped working. Okay. All right, I've moved on manually now. So the down arrow didn't work for some surprising reason. Okay. So your application, what we have, this is called Link to SQL. So I've already shown you, actually, it's SQL Server Compact Edition. But if you're used to working with SQL databases on other platforms, or even indeed on Windows Mobile in the old mobile days, you will be used to doing T-SQL queries, sort of select star from contacts, that kind of query, and then you start you get a command, SQL command, SQLC command object, and you'll execute it, and you'll get back a result set, and that's the kind of way it's always been. But actually, a couple of years ago, Link to SQL came out for desktop, which allows you to do link queries against a database store. And Link to SQL is what we have got on Windows Phone. In fact, it's the only thing we've got on Windows Phone. You cannot do Transact SQL state queries against a Link to SQL database on Windows Phone. So the only kind of queries you can do, an example like that we see here, where you've got a link statement that says from w in db.wines, where country is USA, select the name. So that's a standard kind of link query. But that's actually being executed against the database. And it just so happens that the data is stored in a SQL CE database right down at the bottom there. And internally, what actually happens is you write statements like the top one there, your link statement, and then internally the system.data.link area and does all this, produces that gobbledygook in the middle, which is all the kind of intermediate language that it needs to deconstruct that link query into something that the lower levels will understand. You'll never see this stuff. It's just what happens under the wrappers. And then that turns it, that actually translates it internally into a Transact SQL query like the one you see at the bottom. Select name from wines where country equals USA. That's a standard T-SQL query. But like I said, you don't ever write those. That's actually what does get applied against the database, but that's all handled for you by the intermediate layers there. So it's all about objects, and the whole approach for data access in database in Mango is it's all about objects. It's all about link. It's all about treating them as object collections. And in actual fact, what we've got here is the way that you approach this is that you will design your object model in just the same way as you up till now have been defining your view model classes to define your application data before we started looking at this database option. So you create your object model, but then what you do is you decorate those objects with some attributes that are instructions to the link to SQL layers on how to persist the data in the database. So you put like a table attribute on the top of a class that's just going to be a table. You'll put column attributes on individual properties so that when it gets persisted in the database, the SQL database layer knows how to handle it.
And these are an attribute, by the way, if you haven't seen one before, is basically a label you put on a class, which the C-sharp system then marks up in a certain way. So you can, another one is serializable. You mark a class to say, this class can be serialized, and the system then goes, okay, I can do that. And the table one is just another flavor of the same thing.
Yeah, and we'll see an example in a moment.
Yeah.
And then at runtime, you create an object called a data context, and this data context object is the glue between the database and your object model, the objects in memory. And that does all the translation between the two, and it has an API to submit changes down to the database. So this is the object you work with all the time when you're working against the database. And then there's also a database upgrade path. You can actually create new objects and new indexes and this sort of thing. There's an upgrade API. So if you release a new version of your app and you want to make some structural changes to a database, and you know there's going to be out in the field some users who have got the older schema of your database, there's an API for allowing you to upgrade their database.
That's great, because there was a question in the question saying, how do I upgrade a schema? And the answer is, there's a process for doing it.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of slides coming up
that
will show you how that works.
Better yet.
Indeed. So here's some attributes. Here's a very simple example of how you define a table in the database. So here we've got a class called wine, which actually, if it was a view model, would probably implement iNotify property changed. I've left that off. But then you put a table attribute on the top just to say, okay, this is a table. And then you decorate the individual properties of this class with column attributes. And you can put qualifiers on that, like saying, okay, this is a primary key field.
So you're designing your database in a C-sharp object sense.
Yeah.
So you're basically saying, this one's my primary key, this one's a column, this one is only ever used when the program runs and doesn't need to be stored, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely.
Now, as I'll say in a minute, there is another way of doing this, but this is the kind of, if you like, the way that the documentation will take you. In doing it in a pure link to SQL sort of way, this is what you do. I'll come on to the alternative method in a short while. So you define your tables, and then you need to create your data context. So this object is the glue, I say, between your tables and the actual database. And essentially, it tends to be a very, very simple object. It just has a public property on it, which lists your tables in the database. So in this example, we've got a table of wine objects called wines, and a table of vineyard objects called vineyards. And then we've got a constructor, wine data context, which calls the base constructor, because wine data context extends data context, which is the base class, which is in the system dot data dot link, or system dot link dot data namespace, which comes with the Mango SDK. And then at runtime, so once you define your data context for your database, then you'll just have a few simple lines of code, like you can see on the bottom there, to actually create the database. So you take your wine data context, you give it the path to where you want the database created, and there's an example of that ISO store colon sort of path identifier, which says I want this stored in isolated storage, please, and I want to create a database that's called winedb.sdf. So that it will then, if it doesn't already exist, then the data context there, the create database method, will go ahead and create it. And what it does is it looks at all your the tables that are defined in the data context, goes and looks at those attributes, and from that, on the fly, it figures out how what the tables are and what the indexes are and what the columns are, and it creates it for you.
I think a point worth making, though, you don't have to do it this way. You could build a database using, like, Entity Framework or something and pop that in.
I've got something about that.
Yes. It's even better, because there's some questions about that coming
through. So this is, in fact, the very next slide. Okay, so it says not really supported, because it's not really supported. But in actual fact, and so the define from scratch kind of approach, the code first approach, code first entity framework approach is what it is. It's not exactly the same as the code first entity framework that we're seeing at the moment in the full .NET framework, but it's very, very close. So this code first entity framework approach is probably, would be fair to say, the supported approach. However, as I've already shown you, you can actually open a SQL Server Compact Edition database that you have created. We pulled it off with Isolated Storage Explorer tool, and we opened it in Visual Studio. So you can see that it is possible using desktop tools like SQL Server Management Studio, like Visual Studio, you could define a database using those tools, using some very good tools, some visual designers and that sort of thing. So you can define your database using those tools on the desktop. And like I said, make sure you if you use a SQL Server Compact Edition 3.5 version rather than some of the others that are available, then you're closest to the version that's implemented on Windows Phone. So you can define your database using the desktop tools, and then you can run this SQL Metal tool, which you'll find, which comes with the Visual Studio toolset. You run SQL Metal, and that can look at your database, and it will spit out the appropriate code files.
So this is the C# with the attributes for tables and all that kind of good stuff.
All that stuff that I've just shown you, it all gets spat out.
Magic.
And in actual fact, I originally was going to do a demo with this approach, and then I looked at it and I thought, well, I don't know, it spits out. For one thing, the reason why it's not really supported is you do have to do a few minor changes to the generated code to get it to compile. They're pretty trivial. They're not even worth mentioning. You just have a few things you have to fix. But then actually what you end up with something that kind of is harder to teach, if you like. So I've gone for a simpler approach to make sure that you understand how it works. But there is a very, very good, if you go to App Hub, there's a very good sample application that the team has created called Tidy, which we will see in some of the demos later on today. And there are some labs on there which walk you through this process of taking a SQL Metal defined data context and adding, incorporating it into a Windows Phone application and adding additional code to interact with it. It's probably not for beginners, but once you get a bit of confidence and you're sort of a moderately able phone developer, I recommend you look at that and consider that as an alternative approach. So, we created our database either through the SQL Metal or by doing it by hand. And now we can do our queries on it. And again, this is just simple link queries. So you take your data context, we give a local variable of DB in this example. And then you just have a link query, say, so from W in DB.wines, where the varietal.name, so there you've got a relationship, is equal to Shiraz and is at home equals true, and order by clauses and all this sort of thing, and all the link goodness you can throw at this in order to select records and pull them out and transform them, all the stuff you can do with link. So no, nothing new there. You can just do link queries against it, and it will pull the appropriate records out. You inserts and updates and deletes. Again, you're using the data context is key here. Once you've selected your records with a link query, you can then change properties on them. But that when you're actually making changes on those objects, at that moment they're in memory. So you have to, at some point, when you want to persist those changes back down to the database, you've got to call the submit changes method on the data context. And when you do that, it keeps a track of all the changes that you've made on those objects. It knows, it does change tracking, and then it will write them down to the database. But it won't do that until you call submit changes. So that's a classical error, it's just forgetting to do submit changes, and all your changes have got lost. So a link to SQL figures out what the change set is, and figures out the appropriate update statements.
It builds a bunch of messages to the database and does them, yeah. Okay.
So there's an example of the app code talking to the data context, and we've got some tables there. We've done a selection, pulled them out of the database, and then we actually make some changes to it, like we've changed a property on the little penguin wine there. And then until you call submit changes, nothing happens. But then when you call submit changes, it writes them away to the database and they're persisted. Inserts create a new instance in memory of a wine, and then you call again on the context, on the data context, db.wines.insert_on_submit, and you pass the new objects that you just created. And again, submit changes to persist that down to the database. Update, just change a property on an object that you've previously selected from the database, and then again, submit changes to persist it. Simple enough. And deletes, you select the objects that you want to delete. So there's a link statement to select all vineyards in where the country is Australia. And then there's a delete on submit, and there's another variant called delete all on submit where you give a collection of those. You're kind of marking things for insert and marking things for update, marking things for deletion, and then it's actually persisted. It takes effect when we call the submit changes. So, simple enough. Ah, right. Demo time. Now then, let's go and find... Oh, open a project. I've got a starter one in here.
Got a question from Bill Walker while you're opening the file. You can use Link to SQL on compact framework databases from older Windows Phone 6 apps. And the answer, I think, is that what you would do is you'd build a database and then transfer it into the phone.
Yes,
that's how you would do it. There's no direct access from within the phone to the compact framework or any of the services you may be used to and have loved in previous versions of the Windows Phone platform. The level at which you have the compatibility is actually in terms of moving your database around. And you can do that.
The formats, actually, later, Compact Framework and Windows Mobile does support SQL CE 3.5, and that is broadly compatible with what we've got on Mango. So this is our old friend, the CRM app. And we can generate, 11,800 objects. And okay, I've actually just got... I've got an error. There you go. That wasn't very good. Rob, I've lost. I owe you a drink.
Ah. What? Is it a rebuild thing or...?
I don't know.
Okay.
Okay, let me just try that again.
Okay, let's have a look at some questions.
Yeah, thank you, Rob.
If I tell
fill
my,
in,
if
fill
I tell
in, mate,
my
fill
emergency
in, yeah.
joke, yeah. okay, if we're looking at, are there any questions about performance in terms of when should I use database, when not? Is it easier to use database than actually put files on the disk and just on the storage, just bring them back? The answer really is it's all very much horses for courses. The big thing a database gives you, which you don't get with files so easily, is you can actually search and build queries against it that go real fast.
Yep.
In a file situation, you're opening files and adding storage. That's quite slow. In database context, it goes kind of quick. So the answer really, I think, is to start simple and add complication when the performance becomes an issue.
The good thing about the database is that there is this, obviously, the underneath the wrappers, okay, you're doing link to SQL queries against this data store, which could have half a million records in
yeah.
it. And if you had that persisted in a file, you would have to deserialize and pull them all into memory.
You'd have to for each through them all.
And then you'd have to, then you can do link to objects queries against it. But the beauty of the database approach is you can have your half a million objects in the table
yeah.
and you do a select statement. Well, if you do select all, you'll get them all back. But you know, if you do a sort of query where you are selecting a subset of records, it will only pull out the ones that you asked for.
Yeah, it reduces the amount of stuff that's actually in memory.
And it's very efficient. This is an indexed relational database, so it's fast, you know.
Yeah.
And it's been around for years, actually, in essence. SQL Server Compact is a very, very efficient database. So here's my... this at the moment is the contacts thing, and you can see we've got some contacts. At the moment, these are just in memory, so if we kill it and then open it again, of course, we find that they've all gone again. So what I'm going to do is just change this and put some data persistence into it. I'm going to store it in a database. Let's go and look at the code. In this example, I've just got a contact class. So this is a sort of a traditional, if you like, view model. So it implements iNotify property changed. We've got a bunch of properties on it, like a contact ID. We've got an address property. And it's all the usual stuff. You know, when you do a setter, you invoke the property changed event. So this is all very, very familiar. So I'm going to just update this now and add some attributes. So you'll put on here a table attribute, this kind of thing. So to say it's a table, and then we go on and do the rest. But I'm not going to type it all in. I'm just going to replace this so that we can keep moving. So this is the annotated version, and there's a couple of differences from the one you were just looking at. It's still obviously the public class contact. It's still got all the same properties, but now we've annotated it for linked SQL. So we've got a table attribute up here. We've got column attributes on all the properties. And actually the primary key is also a column, but it's got some additional things on it here. We've got an is primary key equals true. We've got an is DB generated. So actually this is an ID that the database will do an auto increment on. It will give you an ID back. So and all the properties are down here. Now there is one subtle change I'll just point out as well, is that this not only implements iNotify property changed, but it also implements iNotify property changing. And all you do is you have to fire the changing event just before it gets changed, and then the changed event just after, which looks kind of like, why would you bother to do that? But what that is actually assistance to the data context object, which is doing the change tracking. So if you don't do the invoke property changing things, then basically it has to do keeps a copy of the unchanged version when you pull it out. And then when it figures out, when you do your submit changes, it has to kind of do a step-by-step comparison in order to figure out what has changed. And that's more inefficient. Whereas if you do this invoke property changing thing, it only keeps track of the changes as it's going along. So it's much more efficient. So this is something you want to do if you're hand-coding your own classes. So that's our view model class, and now I'm going to add a new class to the project, which is our data context. Okay, so a class, and I'm going to call it CRM data context. Add it in. I'm going to inherit from data context, which I've got to fix up my namespace on that, which is using system.data.link. And then the body of it is just a DB demo crate. Oh, let's try that again.
We have some quite nice questions. Do we have anything other than link access? Can we have views or stored procedures in the database on the phone? And the answer is
no.
It's unfortunately the case that nice though it would be, this version you can basically query the database and nothing else. Store procedures, I'm afraid, aren't available. Another question, what tools do you need to actually work with databases over and above Visual Studio? And I think the SQL...
SQL Server Management Studio, but you have to choose your version carefully because it needs to support SQL Server Compact Edition 3.5.
Is that free?
It comes with... Yes, I believe it is. It comes with SQL Server. You have a paid edition of SQL Server, or you can get the SQL Server Express editions as well.
They're, if so you use those and then use the server, the Explorers on those. Basically, get the. I think you do get some SQL Server installs with Visual Studio for Windows Phone. I'll check up on that. But you certainly, if you download the Visual Studio for web applications, that brings it down for sure.
Yep.
So. And that will then give you the tool chain you can use to build the SQL we're talking about at the moment.
Yep.
Someone said there's a tool called LinkPad, which you can use with SQL C databases, which is quite nice.
Yes, I haven't used it, but I've heard good things about it.
Yeah.
So now we're going to go into the startup logic for applications. So we're going to go deep into the guts of app.xaml.cs. So this is the code that starts on activation, on launch, and that sort of thing. And in here, let's turn off those counters while we're at it. In here, you'll see that this is my current version has got an object collection just sitting in memory there. I initialize it there in the constructor, and here's our public property. This is the data for the memory resident version of the app, so I'm going to get rid of that because we're now going to use a database. And so I'm going to add in here a new method where we can... I've got a new property in app.xaml called CRM, which is called CRM data context, and actually its type is CRM data context. That's the class we just created. And then I've got a new method called create data context, and that has that logic that just creates an instance of CRM data context, and it gives the path to where we want to store our database. And then we have the usual logic: if it doesn't exist already, then create it. So when do we want to call that? Obviously, we want to call it when the app is launching. And we want to call it, actually, when we come back from tombstoning.
Jesse says you can get SQL Management Studio Express from the web platform installer.
You can indeed. And it's free. So that's good. Yeah. So there we go. We've done all that. Now then, so you'll see, you saw that generate data screen that I've been using to actually spit out all my objects. So we need to go and fix up some of their logic in there. So in order to create them in the database rather than in memory. So this is this data generator class. And I've got in here, commented out already, I've just got sort of shorthand to get at that data context. So here we go. We can go. There's a static property on the app object, app.current, which gives you a reference to your app.xaml class.
Okay.
And then we're pulling out that new property we just added to that class. So we're getting a reference here to that data context object. You want one in your application. And then there's various methods in here, like this clear one. That's the old way of doing it, where we were clearing the in-memory collection, so we can get rid of that. And instead, we use the data context to delete all on submit, and then we can get all the objects that are in the contact table. That's one syntax for that. Here's a method that actually deletes the database altogether. And here's the code. The generate method is the one that creates all of those objects and spits them out. So here we've got a loop here. We've got a loop that creates while I is less than max object. So it runs over and over, and it generates masses of dummy contact objects. And here are the properties. Now, in the old version, we were setting the ID manually by a counter, but it's now DB generated, so we don't need that. And then this was the logic that added the contact to the collection. So that was the old way. And now we're going to insert it into the database. So we've got db.contacts insert on submit. And then a little bit further down, we do actually submit changes in batches here. That's what this logic is doing. Oh. There we go. So we're now calling db does submit changes. And there as well. So that's pretty much all we have to do, and the rest of it is not relevant. So that's our we're now generating. That's how you're creating objects, and we're sticking them in. We've got a couple of other things we need to fix up before this should run. Let's go into the logic in mainpage.xaml.cs. Easiest way is to look for errors, actually, because we've got rid of that data collection. So we've got all that fixed up. And now in mainpage, there's a refresh contacts method, which goes and pulls all the data out of the collection of contacts. And this is an example now. It was doing a link query against the in-memory object, and instead now we can do
the, you can get the .crm data context .contacts, which gives us the database collection. There we go. So we're now doing a link query against the database, and we're putting an order by statement on here, and we're pulling them all out, and then we're setting the list box item source to point at that collection. So that's pretty decent. One more thing we have to fix up. In the details page, which is the one you can go to when you click on a contact in the list, again, I've got this shorthand for access, getting at the CRM data context object, so we're just going to uncomment that. And then in the on-navigated to, this details page gets used in two ways. First, for creating new contacts, and also for looking at existing ones. So here's the on-navigated to thing. And so we can just change that. We've got our shorthand to point at the CRM data context, so our link query acts against that instead. And then instead of the in-memory version, we can uncomment this, and we're now doing it against the data context. Submit changes again. So this is all pretty good. One last change in the, when you make a change in the details thing, db.contacts.remove. Oh, that's not going to work. db.contacts.delete on submit. So this is how you delete a record, and the current for the details page, it's actually the context, the data context for the page is the one. So we can just do something like contact, cast that, and that's the context, data context, sorry, the data context for the page. This is normal data binding stuff. And db.submit changes, of course. So there we go. That's how you delete a record. And that query needs fixing up as well. db.contacts. And that should be good. And now, if we run this, we can generate our data. Just create a few objects, 1800. So now we get a complete... Oh, I remember what I did, because I had the old version still running, so it's picked up the old database.
Oh, that's an oldie but a goodie. Yeah. We have to restart the emulator, I'm afraid.
No, I'm just going to delete the app.
Oh, okay, that will also work.
Install it and delete all the data, and then try again, and this time, yeah?
Last comment from Steve. He says another good reason using a database is you get what's called transactional integrity.
You
can make an action and know it's either finished or it hasn't. If you're using files and bad things happen, it's hard to know sometimes when it went wrong.
Indeed, that submit changes that we're calling, that is transactional. So, it'll all work or none of it will work.
Yes.
So you can have a batch of changes that you've applied on objects that, of course, are in memory until you call submit changes, and that is transactional. So,
so you can be sure that you're up to date or not up to date.
So there's our contacts, and Madeline Abbott, we can put another T on her name, Abbott. And then when you... query back, it will save the changes. There's Madeline Abbott now with three T's. We can quit out and start the app again. And of course, it's in the persistent store, so and it didn't work. But anyway, the finished version has it has a. I obviously didn't get something quite right there. I probably didn't save changes in the. I know what I didn't do. I didn't save changes in the exit the screen, but. Going to move on because we're going to be running short of time.
Coffee time, yes, absolutely.
The full finished version of this is in the download code, which for today we'll be trying to get to you around about midday.
Yep.
Okay, so loads of good stuff. Go back to the slides. And, of course, we can have relationships as well. And there's a link to SQL way of doing this sort of thing. So we can have entity set and entity ref. So this is the foreign key thing. So we get, again, this is the integrity that was commented about in there as well. We've got this, we've got referential integrity and things. So you can do things like, you can make sure that you can only add records into one table that are referencing a foreign key in another table. You've got all that goodness that we're used to in any relational database. And you do that with, like I said, with entity sets. So here's an example of a contact thing. And you can see the fields there. We've got a backing field of lowercase leads, which is of type entity set of lead. And then the actual public property, the leads public property, which is the bottom part of the code there, is again the type of entity set of lead. And that is pointing at another table with which is using a foreign key of the contact ID, which is the contact ID, the unique reference of this contact. It'll go on. It automatically links you to the associated child record.
Yeah, the scenario it's here is that I'm a salesman. I've been given a bunch of leads. These are people I can ring up and pester. And this will then actually give me their contact ID. So we have a table called leads. That's all the people I'm supposed to chase. And I'm going to actually find things within that.
Indeed. Yeah. So okay. Effectively adds a property to contact called leads, which actually goes and pulls the associated records out of another table.
Lovely.
So all that good stuff as well. And then this is the other side of the equation. This is how you define that foreign key relationship between a lead object and its parent contact. You have to basically put a field in it called contact ID, which allows it to store that unique reference of its parent. And then you annotate it with that association attribute that you can see round about the middle of the slide there, which this is the glue that links these two together. So that's kind of how you do it. I'm not going to go into a great deal more detail on that, just to raise your awareness that these relationships can be expressed through code as well. One thing on deletes, of course, you have to be careful with child objects, is when you delete a parent, you will actually get an error if you haven't deleted all the children first, because there's this foreign key constraint, which is what we're talking about, referential integrity. It means that your database understands the relationship between different entities within it and will stop you doing bad things. So obviously the answer to that is to delete the child objects first and then go ahead and delete the parent, and then you won't have any issues. Right, the last topic in this bit of it is all about database schema upgrades. So we're talking about how you can update the database. So this allows the simple upgrades. We touched on this a bit earlier. So you've got version one of your app out there, and it had a certain, it had like one table and a few columns. And then version two, you've really expanded the functionality of your app, and you need to get not only new customers will install version 2, and that will be the first version they ever see of it, but of course you've got an existing customer base out there which currently have got your app and hopefully enjoying using it, and they would have a version 1 schema. So you need to upgrade their database. So there is this database schema updater API which allows simple upgrades and supports adding the items that you can see there, tables, columns, indexes, and associations and foreign keys. And again, schema updates are transactional. It will either work or it won't work. And the way you do this is you create your data context object, just the same as everything else you do with Link to SQL, and then you create a database schema updater object by calling the create database schema updater method on your data context. And then there's a property on that database schema updater object, which is your database schema version. So you can look at the current version of the database that's there, if there is one, and then you can apply these, you can actually add these additional attributes to it, add tables and add columns. What you actually have to do is your code would have these, obviously you have these objects defined, you'd have a new table, you'd have a new column added into an existing table, and this add column wine here, bottle type, will instruct the engine to go off, look at your new wine table definition, go and find the bottle type column, and it knows later, that it then needs to go and add it actually down into the physical database. And then, of course, you need to update the database schema version. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what that is all about. Now, just to wrap up on this section, let's talk about a little bit of best practices, and I said we'd talk about performance. We've been taking a few as we go along. First of all, about isolated storage in general, and again, this was asked a bit earlier, there are no quotas on Windows Phone. So it's up to you to make careful use of the space and to be a good citizen.
We had a question which was, what's the upper limit on the size of a field in the database? Can I store pictures in database tables as big blobs?
You can do that.
So, yeah, within the limits of the storage space, you can do that.
Yes, and it's whatever the constraints are. You have to go and look at the SQL Server Compact Edition database to find out actually what the top-level constraints are on the actual size of that. But yes, you can store very large objects in sort of blob columns and image columns. I think it's image columns you use on on this database. Yeah, so it's up to you to be a good citizen as far as using space is concerned. Make sure you tidy up stuff you don't need. And one thing you might want to consider is that you might want to push your data up to the cloud if you're finding that you really need to store a load of stuff.
Yeah.
Do we really want it on the phone? So it's up to you just to do the right thing in that respect. Serialization, I'm not talking about the database here, but all that serialization stuff. If you're using the serialization to file, that can be slow. The first demo I did showed all that. So consider using threads, perhaps, in order to do that, so that you're not slowing down the main UI, and that could be your deserialization, and serialization could be happening in the background, and then you fill in your UI with the data when it's ready. That's a technique we've certainly used on one of our apps if you're having problems with your startup times.
So. One just had a thing pop up. Someone says, is there a 500 meg limit for SQLC databases? I think there may well be. We'll have to do some checking on that. But we'll check and come back to you. I'll put it on the blog.
Okay, yeah. It's all in the SQL Server books online, all this kind of stuff. So I don't have it off the top of my head, yeah.
We have got one or two people, I think, who are new to databases and haven't actually got some of the SQL and the link background. Don't worry. There are some nice texts. And what we'll do is, again, we'll put some stuff out there with links to places you can learn a bit more about DBs and then come back and watch this recording. To get you a stronger context for the stuff, because we're going at a fair old lick here.
Yes. There's a lot in it. It's a very rich new set of functionality.
So if you need it, don't worry. It's just stuff you have to learn. It's not a big problem.
And also, I also say, to back up what we're teaching you here as well, go and have a look on App Hub. There's a lot of tutorials on there as well that will help you to grasp how to use this technology. So performance with Link to SQL, try and keep your change sets small. You want to try and do submit changes often, early and often if possible. And because obviously until you do that, all your changes are actually just simply held in the in-memory copy of those objects in your data context. And if your app terminates, if you haven't done a submit changes, those changes will be lost. So just do submit early and often according to what your application logic requires, of course. And again, you can do queries against the database and pull stuff back on background threads. You don't want to be doing all this stuff on the UI thread, because the more stuff you do on your UI thread, in your main thread, main code, if you like, whenever you're doing stuff on the UI thread, it means the UI itself can't update, because it's competing with you for resources. So you might want to think of spinning off a background thread, using the background worker to go off and find some data, store it in a data set, so you can then come back to it when it's ready. If you've got read-only queries, there's a set object tracking enabled thing. You can set that to true or false. So if you know that you're going to pull a set of data out of the database and you're not going to update it...
It's a reference table, basically.
Yeah, then make sure you set this flag, because then the data context doesn't have to turn on its change tracking mechanism, so you'll get better performance. And with any database, if you're doing a lot of queries against a contact, say you find that in your logic you're doing a lot of select contacts where state equals WA or something, and you're doing a lot of that, if you don't put an index on that state column, then every time it wants to go and find the WA, it has to do a table scan. It has to basically start the first one and go through, there's one. But if you've got an index on it, it can go straight and go, bang, there you go. And you get much better performance. So indexes are your friend.
Okay.
And, so the large reference data table is one I talked about. If you've got a big, like a dictionary app or something like that, and you want to ship it with pre-populated with a load of data, there's a couple of ways you can do that. You could actually build a desktop app with SQL Server 3.5 and build it that way, or you can create a phone app. In fact, the supported way is to create a phone app, to be honest, because there's no risk of incompatibilities. Like I said, it's kind of 3.5-ish on the phone, but they put some fixes in. Yeah, most things will work, but it's kind of not supported if you like to do a desktop app. But we all know we're all going to do it. The supported way is to create a phone project in order to pre-populate your data in whatever way, and then you can pull that database file out using the Isolated Storage Explorer tool and ship that as content in your app, and that will end up in the app data storage area as a read-only database. And the last thing to say is just to use the right tool for the job. You know, database is very nice, but it may not be appropriate for your app. If you've got fairly modest data storage requirements, maybe just a flat file is the way to go. So that's really all there is to say.
I think we can say thank you very much, and onward with tiles and notifications.
Well, no, we've got an hour of networking.
Networking,
50
sorry.
Minutes of networking coming up, and then 50 minutes of tiles and notifications. So a 10-minute break now, and then we'll be back for the networking bit of things.
Yep.
So thanks very much.
Thank you.